Halfway through the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Welcoming back to the program, the one, the only, Michael Trakos of Post Media. You can read his work, of course, in the National Post and in the various Sun Media newspapers. Michael, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Happy New Year.
This morning. Happy belated New Year. Yeah, that's right.
Haven't spoken to you.
You say Happy New Year, we're almost at the trade deadline, so it's been a while since we talked.
Well, you know, we were talking about the trade deadline earlier in the program, Michael, and, you know, from the Winnipeg Jets perspective, you know, we were talking about it. You know, from the Toronto point of view, as you look at this Winnipeg Jets team here, you know, obviously flying high atop the Central Division, one of the upper echelon teams in the entire NHL, you know, is this, from your perspective in Toronto, is this the year the Winnipeg Jets should absolutely be making a run and going to do what's necessary to make a Stanley Cup run?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I thought this was a team that I think every year we were just waiting for this kind of season to happen. And really, I think Connor Hellebuck has been behind the a lot of the success, obviously. When you look at the past years, the glaring kind of omission on this team was goaltending, and finally they're getting some, and Hellebuck deservingly going to the All-Star game for Winnipeg along with Blake Wheeler. Really, you could have picked probably 2, 3, maybe 4 other guys from the Jets. That's how great the season's been all around for them, minus some health concerns lately. But yeah, when you're looking at the, you know, just looking at the landscape, like, when is the last time that we've seen a Chicago team really kind of having the season they're having? I know LA's having a solid year, but still, there's you could probably pick a couple of areas of concern with them. And I know Vegas is having really the season, or has been the story of the season. But if you're the Winnipeg Jets, are you really worried about a Las Vegas team that doesn't have the frontline players and on paper doesn't really have that kind of scary roster that we have in Winnipeg or in other spots? So I look at those teams. I look in the East with some concerns in Pittsburgh, obvious concerns in Washington, as always, when you're looking at their defense. And I see this is a huge window of opportunity that Winnipeg has right now.
You know, Mike, the Toronto Maple Leafs are on their 5-day break right now. They don't play this weekend. The next game is Tuesday against the St. Louis Blues. And, you know, we were talking about this on Wednesday's NHL This Week show. Based on the standings, looks like the Leafs and the Bruins are basically locked in to playing each other in the first round. Do you have a problem with that? Should the Leafs have a problem with that? You know, midway through the season, already knowing who their first round opponent is going to basically be?
I'd have a problem the fact that it's the Bruins. The Boston Bruins are a very, very good team right now. They might be one of the hotter teams in the East. When you look at the East, it's nothing but really good teams at the top and really bad teams at the bottom, and then just a ton of mediocrity in the middle. So Boston right now is just playing as good as they've ever played. There are some demons, obviously. Last time the Leafs were in the playoffs, the time before they were in the playoffs during that lockout shortened season in 12-13. They played the Bruins, and obviously it went to a game 7, and the Bruins mounted that improbable comeback. But there's really no one on this roster from that time. Like, you've got Jake Gardner and I think Nazem Kadri and maybe one or two other players, but there's enough turnover there where I don't think Austin Matthews is going to have to answer any questions about, well, what's it like playing the Bruins? There's no Phil Kessel going, oh, what's it like playing the team that traded you? So the only thing concern I'd have is just that if I'm the Leafs, is that this is a good Bruins team. A lot of veteran players, a lot of guys that know what it feels like to be in a playoff atmosphere, whereas the Leafs, this is still the beginning stages of their really kind of maturation process. But the other concerning thing is, like you mentioned it off the top, how weird is that mm-hmm. it's pretty much locked in? Like, if you're a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, you can basically say, okay, I'm going to book a hotel in Boston in spring, and I know that whether it's the Monday and Wednesday they're going to play or if it's going to be the Friday, Sunday, they're playing in Boston in that first round. And that's kind of an interesting fact. you're not catching Tampa because they've run away with that division, and you're not getting caught by the next best team in that division, which right now is Florida, and that's an 11-point gap between Florida Panthers and the Toronto Maple Leafs. So just shows how weak the Atlantic division is, where you've got the five worst teams in the division are the five worst teams in the conference. So, well, I know things are cyclical, but this is kind of crazy, right, when you think about it.
You know, Mike, we were talking about Blake Wheeler in the last segment and whether he merits, you know, Hart Memorial Trophy recognition for what he's been able to do this season, especially in light of the fact that, you know, Mark Scheifele has gone down with injury and he seems to have elevated his game. I know we're only at the halfway point, but what do you think about Blake Wheeler and his play this season? And do you think he's getting the recognition outside of Manitoba, really, for what he's been able to do for the Winnipeg Jets?
I'll say probably not. Like, no one talks about, like, I listen to Toronto radio, sports radio, and no one's ever talking about Blake Wheeler, whether it's Hockey Central or whether it's a TSN program or just any sort of sports talk radio or even on TV. He doesn't get the recognition, and he should get the recognition because, like you said, he's having a monster year with or without Scheifele in the lineup. And it's the true mark of a captain or a leader that he's doing that. And you look at him right now, what is he tied? Is he tied for second in scoring?
Yeah.
And the problem is when you're talking about Hart Trophy consideration, well, Blake Wheeler is one of, what, 6 or 12 guys that are tied for second in scoring? Like, there is a logjam at the top of the scoring race where you've got McKinnon, Stamkos, Goudreau, Claude Giroux. Then after that, John Tavares, Voracek, McDavid, Josh Bailey. So I don't know if anyone's going to be catching Nikita Kucherov, but after that, there's a lot of good, talented players. And, you know, and the problem with Winnipeg, I think there's a lot of factors. I don't think it's just Blake Wheeler carrying the load for them on any given night, whether it's Hellebuck, whether it's a Dustin Byfuglien finally scoring, whether it's Line A, Ehlers. You go down the list, and there's a lot of different options. Whereas I think a guy like Nate McKinnon is going to get a lot of Calder, or sorry, Hart Trophy consideration, just because when you look at that depleted Colorado Avalanche lineup, if McKinnon can get them into the playoffs, well, you're really looking at one player. And I think Kucherov is also going to get a lot of consideration. So it's going to be difficult for, I think, voters just to kind of single out Blake Wheeler's contributions when you figure this Winnipeg team is deep. And I think that's a lot of the reason why they're one of the beasts of the Western Conference right now.
Michael Trakos is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the national hockey writer for Post Media. You can read his work, of course, in the National Post and across the Sun Media chain. Michael, Victor Hedman goes out for the Tampa Bay Lightning for the next month or so, give or take. Obviously, the Lightning have banked a ton of points, and they're going to be able to withstand the injury for the time being. But how important is a fully healthy Victor Hedman for their Stanley Cup aspirations?
Well, I think it goes without saying that your number one defenseman is obviously going to be important, but yeah, I think Tampa's going to be able to survive this. You know, maybe getting a month off is going to be a benefit for this team because Hedman is logging a ton of minutes on the back end, and you know, everyone kind of needs a break. Where I think this is really a kind of a sad story is you look at the defense scoring race right now, and Victor Hedman was third in scoring behind John Klingberg and John Carlson. And this is really one of the rare years where Erik Karlsson isn't at the top of the scoring race and isn't even at the near the top of the overall scoring race. And you're having kind of an off year by Brent Burns as well. So I think this was really kind of the season that Victor Hedman was going to be the runaway favorite for the Norris Trophy. Does this change with him being out a month? It very well could be. I know right now if I was going to do the Norris Trophy voting, I'd have Hedman 1, I'd probably have Doughty 2, and then maybe Pietrangelo 3. So I don't know if this opens the window even more so for Drew Doughty, who's right behind him in the points. But beyond that, it's just been a huge factor once again for the LA Kings, especially with Muzzin out for as long as he's been out. So that's the sad thing, I think. This was really the year where Victor Hedman was going to be a deserving Norris Trophy winner, and we'll see if this changes because a month off is only a month off, and if he can come back and still score, which I think is definitely a requirement now for the Norris Trophy, I think we've gone past the point where you can just be a solid defender. I think you have to put up big numbers as well. If he can continue doing that on a point-per-game basis, then Victor Hedman's going to be a Norris Trophy winner, but it does raise a question as to whether Doughty's maybe moving into the slot now as a favorite.
Mike, what was your reaction to Hockey Canada's 2018 Men's Olympic team announcement? You had some former Leafs on there, goaltender Ben Scrivens, Brandon Cozen. He played for the Leafs 3 or 4 years ago. You had son of former Toronto Maple Leaf, Steve Stumpy Thomas, Christian Thomas. He's the youngest player on Team Canada. What was your overall reaction to the roster that was named on Thursday?
Yeah, probably like just a meh. Like, you know, let's be honest. There's going to be some great stories. And a guy like Wojtek Wolski and what he overcame with that neck injury, that's one of the – that's basically the tip of the iceberg in terms of these feel-good stories that you're going to hear for a lot of these kind of journeyman NHLers, guys that maybe are looking for one last kick at the can. Former NHLers, fine, but right now they're definitely not NHLers. So, you know, like, there's that factor. But I think overall, I don't know about you guys, how you feel about it, but I'm not overly excited when I hear these names. I'm not overly excited when I think about a tournament where you're not going to have NHLers. We'll see. Like, let's see how competitive this is. But right now, I didn't register that much in terms of an excitement factor. How do you guys feel about it?
I agree with you, Michael. I'm not sure that I'm going to be waking up at the 3 in the morning to be viewing these games. Ezzy is all in, but that's because, I mean, that's just Ezzy's personality and nature, I would suggest.
Yeah, I'm obviously, you know, the biggest hockey nut of the three of us. And, you know, Dave is obviously, you know, a hockey nut too, but I'll watch any level of hockey. I'll watch AAA hockey in Winnipeg, but, I mean, as far as not having any current NHLers, there obviously isn't the excitement that there was in 2014 or 2010 in Vancouver. But I think it's neat because you have the aspect of going back to 1994, 1992, when you had amateur players who weren't in the NHL. So I'm excited, but there's definitely not too many players on this team, you know, that are going to amaze you. I mean, it's a lot of guys that obviously their NHL careers didn't work out, and they're either playing in Russia or Switzerland or Sweden. But I'm still going to watch.
Yeah, I'm going to watch. And you know what? I think it's going to probably be a more competitive and maybe more interesting tournament rather than Canada walking over all the weaker nations and then really playing kind of a grind-em style against the Russias and the Swedens, and where you don't really see the skill level of a Sidney Crosby or even a McDavid. I could see Mike Babcock coaching McDavid into a shop locker, to be honest. So maybe this is going to be more interesting. Maybe we're going to have really a bit unknown as to how good this Canadian team is. And I think that's probably the most interesting factor. But, you know, like, ideally, if you're not going to have NHLers, I would have rather them gone the other way and said, you know what, let's go with a sort of under 20, maybe an under 21 team where you've got a couple exemptions where a guy who's under 23 can also be on that team. Closer to, obviously, what we saw at the World Juniors. At least that way you're going, okay, well, these aren't NHLers, but they're actually on their way to becoming NHLers, versus the other way where you're going, well, these were NHLers and now they're on their way to becoming retired NHLers.
You know, Mike, we were talking last year that Jaromir Jagr could be playing until he was 50, and now it looks like his time in the NHL is done. Are you a little surprised at how quickly it's ended? It seems like for the ageless one, Jaromir Jagr, and more importantly, the Calgary Flames seem to be a team nobody's really talking about, but they've strung together 6 wins in a row and have quietly climbed up into the Western Conference standings.
Yeah, it's funny how, like, age can kind of just creep up on you, and it seems like he was going to play, like he said, until he was 50, and fine, he was slowing down, but he was finding other ways to be effective, whether it was on the power play or just kind of playing a really strong cycle game. And then, yeah, you can kind of snap your fingers and wake up one day and all of a sudden Jaromir Jagr is always out of the lineup, and he's not even contributing in that regard. So yeah, it is kind of disappointing, but I think we all kind of saw this coming, where it was going to be, okay, well, when is it going to completely just fall apart for this guy? And yeah, lo and behold, Calgary got him just a year or maybe 2 years too late from the guy that he was when he was making the All-Star team with the Panthers. So the good news is that, you know what, Calgary tried the experiment. They really kind of exhausted every option, and it didn't work out. And yet this is a team that's still, like you said, stringing together wins. Just when you thought they might have been looking on the way out, they've won like, what, 6 or 7 games straight now. And going into really the final stretch before the trade deadline, in a really confident spot. So Good on the Flames. I think the more Canadian teams that we have in the playoff mix, the better. I think that's obviously going to drive excitement in this country. And, you know, it's good for a lot of the Calgary young players that they have there, whether it's a Sam Bennett, a Mark Jankowski, or the Goudreaus or the Monahan.
Michael Trakos is the national hockey writer for Post Media. He's a very good friend of this program. Michael, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this morning.
All right, thanks, guys. Always a pleasure coming on your show. Have a great rest of the time.
You too, Mike. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. When we come back, we talk about the Team Canada announcement for the 2018 Olympics. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
I think Canada's formed a very, very competitive team. I think they have a team that's more than capable of competing. I just talked about players that have had success in their respective leagues. They're going to be competing against a lot of the same players that they're already having success against. So, you know, then when you hear Willie Desjardins talk about Brandon Cozen and the competitive nature, and that's something that is always going to be in place with Team Canada. So what I would say is, I think Team Canada has a real solid chance to compete for the gold medal in Pyeongchang. And I think when you look at their abilities to score, their abilities to possess the puck in the offensive zone, to transition, to get solid goaltending, I think all the elements are in place. Don't underestimate them.
That's TSN Director of Scouting Craig Button on the announcement of Canada's 2018 men's Olympic team that'll do battle in Pyeongchang, South Korea, coming up in the next month. It's amazing. It's already here. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to catch the game, Bernstein's Deli's got you covered. All the big screen TVs, great food and drink specials. It's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's.
I saw yesterday on Twitter, Drew, you were scarfing down an icy sandwich.
Yeah, I went with some of my colleagues. One of my colleagues, Matt, he brought his son, Adam, you know, big football player, big football star for the Rifles. So he joined us for some, we had about half a dozen Legal Curve sandwiches right around the table. So it was a very nice lunch that we all had. Bernstein's Deli, of course, a warm and gracious host for us yesterday afternoon and our delightful and Legal Curve sandwiches. So Team Canada's announcement is made earlier this week in Calgary. Of course, a couple ties to Manitoba. Che Genoway of Morden, Manitoba, is going to be on the back end for Canada. And, of course, also, we have, as we mentioned earlier in the show, Quinton Howden of Oak Bank, Manitoba, is going to make the team as well. Canada opting to go with a veteran-laden lineup. I mean, the youngest player.
By the way, shout out. I've got some family in Oak Bank.
Oh,
so shout out to them.
Shout out to Ezzy's family in Oak Bank.
Yep.
Canada, like I said, going with a veteran-laden lineup. The youngest player, 25-year-old Christian Thomas,
yep,
as you mentioned, the son of Steve Thomas. And then the oldest player, Chris Lee, who you might remember as a member of the Ottawa Senators, I think most recently in the NHL, if I'm not mistaken. Your thoughts on this lineup? I mean, they have NHL experience galore. Your thoughts, as opposed to maybe breaking it down individually,
yeah,
your thoughts on Canada going with the veteran group as opposed to a younger group? You'd heard rumors that maybe they were going to go with some Canadian Hockey League players, a Jordan Kyrou. He had his name bandied about. Cale Makar, he apparently was given an opportunity. He was asked to join Team Canada from his U.S. college team. That he said thank you, but no thank you. So your thoughts on the veteran-laden lineup for Team Canada?
Yeah, a little bit older than I thought it was going to be. You know, Christian Thomas, as you mentioned, Drew, youngest player on the team. Chris Lee, by the way, you remember, he's represented Team Canada at the World Hockey Championship.
Sure.
And he's put a nice career together playing for Magnitogorsk in the Continental Hockey League, an offensive defenseman. So overall, you know, not too many surprises, Drew. I mean, we were obviously hoping that Jacob McFlicker was going to make the team. He's represented Canada before at the Spengler Cup. He's just a favorite of ours. We know him.
Good friend of the program.
Yeah, and so, you know, unfortunately, he doesn't make the team. But as you mentioned, you know, some good Manitoba stories. Che Genoway from, you know, Morden, south of us here in Winnipeg, and Quinton Howden, who played for the Jets and Moose last year. But, I mean, overall, I mean, you knew there were going to be some players that were going to make this team. I mean, Derek Roy is going to be the veteran leader of this team. They're going to depend on him a lot for offense on this team. And You know, he's a guy who was in the NHL just as recently as 3 years ago, and he's having a good season for Linköping in the Swedish league. And, you know, overall, I mean, you're going to get offense from a variety of sources on this team. There's no one player that night in and night out, and that's no different than, you know, when the NHL was participating in the Olympics. You remember, you know, back in 2014, you know, there were a lot of concerns with Sidney Crosby and his lack of scoring. But overall, you know, a pretty talented roster of players that are mostly former NHLers. You know, it's nice to see, you know, guys like Rene Bork and Wojtek Volski make the team. Rene Bork, it's not too long ago that he was in the National Hockey League. Gilbert Brule,
yeah,
he obviously...
How is Rene Bork going to be traded for a sixth-round draft pick at the trade deadline if he's playing for Team Canada?
Yeah, and... You know, but, you know, to Craig Button's point, I mean, he mentioned Brandon Kozin, and he's having a good year this year playing for a Lokomotiv in the Continental Hockey League. And, you know, there's no shortage of guys that can put the puck in the net. I mean, that defense for me is a little bit underwhelming. We talked about, you know, Chris Lee, Marc-Andre Gragnani, players like Stefan Elliott. I mean, there aren't a lot of offensive-minded defensemen. These guys can skate on the open ice, but, you know, as far as the defense is concerned, you know, it was a little underwhelming for me. And in goal, I imagine it's going to be Ben Scrivens as the starter and maybe Justin Peters as your third goalie. But probably it's going to be between Scrivens and Poulin. I imagine they're going to share the starts. And then whoever of those two goaltenders plays better will probably get the starts in the later rounds. But this team can compete for a gold medal, and that's because the entire tournament is wide open, right?
Yeah.
And when you're talking about the favorites, I mean, you got to throw in the U.S., you got to throw in Russia, or the country that is Russia that is going to use Russian hockey players, or
yeah, that's
whatever.
Not Russia, but Russia.
Exactly. Yeah. And the
Russian
Swedes.
Olympic athletes or something, or Olympic
right.
athletes from Russia,
yeah,
I think is what their team name
you're
is.
You're going to have guys like Ilya Kovalchuk on that
O-A-R.
Team.
OAR.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a wide-open tournament, but, you know, as far as this roster goes, I mean, there's a lot of talented players. Sure, you're not going to say, you know, that, you know, there's obviously not a Connor McDavid or a Sidney Crosby on the roster, but lots of firepower for sure.
It seems like goaltending will be a strength for this team. I mean, Ben Scrivens is a, you know, he was a, you know, an NHL goaltender for a lot of years. I mean, all these guys, you know, Justin Peters was an NHL goaltender. You remember him with the Carolina Hurricanes, and even Kevin Poulin. So I think goaltending is going to be a strength. And I guess by going with a veteran-laden team, you're sort of what you might be lacking or giving up in a little bit of maybe potential and I don't want to say talent, but maybe talent, for lack of a better word, you're gonna be have a smart structured team that knows how to sort of play within themselves. I think that's what you're gonna see from Team Canada in the Olympics. But you know, Ezzy, your point is right. It's wide open. Nobody really knows what to expect from anybody. You remember, I mean, the last time that there weren't Olympians really there, you know, we're, you know, 94 in Lillehammer, you know, you remember that was Paul Kariya played for Team Canada and Peter Forsberg for Team Sweden. You don't have any of these.
And our next guest.
Chris Kontos, who's going to join us in a couple minutes, he was on Team Canada. You don't have these bona fide up-and-coming players that you used to. It's almost like this is the IHL version of the minor leagues as compared to the AHL version that was in the 92 and 94 Olympics when it was up-and-comers as opposed to guys towards the end of their playing career.
Hey, if we can get Gordie Howe in his Detroit Vipers jersey, I'm okay with that. IHL reference.
I know they got the IHL reference there, okay. Yeah. But go ahead, Ez.
Yeah, you know, we mentioned, you know, that these are mainly veteran players that have been playing in the Continental Hockey League or the Swedish League or the Swiss League, but these are guys that are playing key roles on their teams. These aren't guys that are necessarily towards the end of their careers. We mentioned Gilbert Brule earlier. I mean, this is a guy that's got 31 points in 40 games this year.
Towards the end of their NHL careers is what I meant, sorry.
Right. No, I know what you meant. Yeah. And you know, so, I mean, when we say there's lots of firepower, I mean, these are still productive professional hockey players. These aren't guys, you know, that are third or fourth line guys. These are players that play key roles on their team, whether it's in Russia or Sweden or Switzerland. So, again, I mean, I think Canada is going to be competitive, but it's going to come down to, you know, single game elimination situations. It's going to come down to goaltending. But I agree. I mean, goaltending is a strength. You know, Ben Scrivens and Justin Peters and Kevin Poulin, you know, their NHL careers might have fizzled out a little bit, but they're having big roles. Ben Scriven's numbers have been great so far this year playing in the Continental Hockey League. He's picked up 19 wins. So that's definitely going to be a strength. I agree with you on that one, Drew.
The last time non NHLers played in the Olympics was 1994 in Lillehammer. Chris Kontos was a member of Team Canada. He joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number three up next on TSN 1290. Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program Chris Kontos. Chris, of course, had a lengthy hockey career, NHL, AHL, IHL, and was a member of Team Canada at the 1994 Lillehammer Olympics, the last time there was an Olympic game without NHL players. Chris, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Chris. Obviously brought you on to talk about your Olympic experiences. You know, the announcement made earlier this week about Team Canada of Team Canada that's going to represent Canada in the men's Olympic hockey tournament in Pyeongchang. You know, going back to 1994, just how honored were you? What were your emotions when you were first named as a member of Team Canada to represent Canada and wear the Canadian flag at the Lillehammer Olympics?
Well, my situation was a little different. I was on the 92 national team, and unfortunately, I was cut on the way from the pre-tournament in Sweden on the way to Albertville. So 92 was a frustrating year for me. I played on the national team the whole year, hoping to get into the Olympics. They won silver medal that year. You know, Eric Lindros was on that team and a cast of other guys that had great NHL careers afterwards. Unfortunately, I didn't make it, but Terry Crisp was one of the assistant coaches on that team, and I got a chance to play with Tampa the next year, which I had a fairly successful year. I think I scored 27 goals and had a pretty good season. I ran into a bit of a contract problem with the Lightning after that, and the Olympics decided to go every second year so that the Summer and Winter Olympics would offset and not be on the same year. And it was a great opportunity that came up for me 2 years later that they said, would you consider coming to the Olympics? And I said, I just said, forget about the NHL, I'm all in. And I committed to play with them from that moment that they asked.
Chris, what was it like at that time when it was announced that Peter Nedved was going to play for Team Canada? Because, of course, he is from the Czech Republic, but he had Canadian citizenship. But I remember that was a big surprise back then that Peter Nedved was going to represent Team Canada at the Olympics.
You know, funny times, because back then there were no rules. Like, I guess it had never really happened. And he had ended up becoming a Canadian citizen just before, and we got word that they allowed him to play with us, and we welcomed him with open arms. He's a great guy and a fun-loving, you know, guy that had a great career in the NHL and even after that anywhere else that he played. And we embraced him, and it was all part of that chemistry that helped, you know, make us go from like an eighth-ranked team in the Olympics to, you know, an almost gold-winning team.
And he, of course, represented the Czech Republic in Sochi.
Yeah, it's funny how the rules and, but I think there's new rules now, and there's that kind of thing can't happen anymore, I don't think, or there's a grace period or something like that. But regardless, he was Canadian for that tournament, and we loved having him.
You know, Chris, you touched on your time in Tampa, and you played through, you know, a long NHL and AHL career, as Drew touched on to open the segment, but did you ever have more fun than the Tampa Bay Lightning first game of their franchise history, scoring four goals? And do people still talk to you about those, that opening game in the franchise history?
Oh, absolutely. We just had the 25-year anniversary, which, you know, obviously 25 years have passed, and they had most of the team back, and we all got together, and we went back to the fairgrounds, and they set up the arena, and they had little X's on the floor where the goals were scored and stuff, and we had, like, over 10,000 people show up just to see and hear from the original team. Tampa's really embraced hockey, and it's an incredible place.
Chris Kontos is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Chris was a member of the 1994 Team Canada that played at the Lillehammer Games. Chris, it's sort of an indelible mark that everybody remembers that shootout loss to this Team Sweden, Forsberg scoring, and then Paul Kariya unable to score for Canada. What was it like being there? I mean, this is as Team Canada was still in their gold medal drought when it came to Olympic hockey. What was it like getting so close to being the team that lifted the gold medal drought for Team Canada?
Well, being ranked eighth and us kind of buying into a plan, a program, a system, and starting to believe in ourselves and getting to that point where we had a chance to win the gold, I think we were up 2-1 with a couple minutes left in the game, and I mean, that's really close. All you have to do is, you know, just close the door and you've got a gold medal around your neck. Unfortunately, I think we took a late penalty and Sweden tied it, then we went into overtime, and then the infamous shootout, which I would have loved to have shot, but my number never got called for whatever reason. But, you know, you were talking about Peter Nedved. We had a chance before Paulie had a chance to win or tie it. Peter had he had a huge hook on his stick, and that was the Euro curve that was a heel. You guys talk about a legal curve. It was the a huge heel curve, and he had a move where he came down, kind of pump faked, went to the backhand, and 9 times out of 10, he, you know, just slip it in or tuck one home. And he did the move. He had it. That was wide open. I think the puck went an extra inch down his blade and opened that, and he missed it because of that huge heel curve, and it went wide right. And that was the gold medal for us. Like, we saw it. And unfortunately, that's how it goes, and we didn't get it. But and then the infamous Forsberg stamp goal that he, you know, even when he did it, I thought Corey Hirsch just, you know, nonchalantly just, you know, grabbed it with his glove and picked it up. But then the crowd went crazy, jumping around, and we know, oh, that's a goal, and it was over.
You know, Chris, back in 1994, that was when the Canadian national team still existed. You had several players on that 94 team that came from the Canadian national team. When you look at where Hockey Canada is now, obviously have the program of excellence, but is that something that you'd maybe like to see come back, whether that's at the senior level or maybe have something similar to what USA Hockey has with the USA national team development program?
Yeah, it's a good point. If the NHL was going to get back into it and keep sending their, you know, the best of the best, then it kind of defeats the purpose. But back then, we were building up for the whole year to try to figure out how we could get better so that we could compete on the national stage when, you know, Russia and, you know, the international teams, they were basically pros because they were considered amateurs, but they were, you know, getting compensated by their countries, and it was kind of unfair, but it was kind of neat. I can tell you guys, though, it's not that glamorous. It's a grind when you're, you know, playing in Alberta and Northwest Territories, like 7 games and 9 nights, and you're on a bus and you're freezing, and you're, you know, you get to a place late with, you know, 20 minutes to go before the game, and you don't even get a warm-up, and you're out there playing against who knows, whoever they have us scheduled against. It's a grind. And the glamorous part is the Olympics, and it was worth it. You know, I played on the national team in 92 and did the grind there, and then I got to play on it in 94. And something you asked me about Tampa, that was a highlight. I had a great little spout of success in Los Angeles, but I think my Olympic memory is the pinnacle, or that's the thing that I cherish the most.
You know, Chris, you were part of the Manitoba Moose as well, for some fans who don't know, and, you know, you've played on a lot of teams, but what was it like coming to Winnipeg for what was probably a disappointing season for a lot of people here in the city because they had just lost the Jets, but of course, you know, the Manitoba Moose filled that void, and you were a member of that team for 40 games.
We loved it. My wife, my young son, who's playing now, it was great. I mean, other than the temperatures at this time of year, a little next month, but we loved it. I mean, I had a block heater in my vehicle and learned how to wash it without it freezing into an ice cube or whatever. But it was great memories. We enjoyed it. With the guys that were there were great, and we still have fun, and we're so happy that they did get NHL back.
Chris, we'll let you go on this last question. You know, you hear about a lot of people are maybe poo-pooing this version of the Olympics, given that the NHL players won't be there. What would you say to those fans who might not be as interested if this was an NHL best-on-best tournament? Do you think that ultimately the stories that, you know, that exist among this Team Canada and that exist among the other teams are going to captivate the nation in a manner? Maybe not, you know, maybe the hockey's not going to be exactly the same, but the stories will captivate the country just the same when push comes to shove?
Well, nowadays with media and the access that media has to the guys and to the stories, I mean, you're going to peel back the onion when it comes, and there's going to be a lot of layers and guys that, you know, thought they had a great NHL career coming, maybe, you know, got sidetracked, but now they're getting a second shot or a chance to prove themselves on the world stage. And, you know, there could be some upsets and some heroic moments where, you know, Canada, you know, just maybe checks it out and starts watching, and then hopefully our guys, you know, they do what our best on best do when they go to the last few times we've gone to the Olympics. You've got guys that are goal scorers that are asked to play defense or take 30-second shifts, and they do it unconditionally, and the results have been clear. So, I mean, hopefully that when you pull that Canadian national jersey on, it's just it's something that you're proud of, that you're there for, and you're doing it for your country, and I'm hoping that the result is gold.
Chris, we just have one more question for you. It's very well known that you hold the Tampa Bay Lightning record for goals in a game. You scored 4 goals in a game back in 1992. Now, is this finally going to be the year that Steven Stamkos or Nikita Kucherov breaks your record?
That's a funny question. A couple of years ago, before Marty St. Louis got traded to New York, he tied it. He and some reporters said it was like, you know, 7,900 and some, it was years and years later. And it's hard to believe that with Stammer there, you know, all these years, he hasn't got 4 or 5 or 6 goals in the game because he's such a prolific scorer. So I've been lucky. Marty's part of that club now, and it's always an honor anytime somebody scores 4 goals and my phone light starts to light up with messages and interviews and things like that.
Chris Kontos was a member of the Tampa Bay Lightning. He had a lengthy NHL, AHL, and IHL career, and of course he represented Team Canada at the 1994 Lillehammer Olympics. Chris, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Anytime. Stay warm, guys.
Take care, Chris. Thanks again. When we come back, the TSN trade bait board has been updated. We'll look at who's atop that board. Maybe it's a name familiar to us here in Winnipeg. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN 1290.
Officially trade bait season.
Look at Evander Kane tied for the team lead. Scoring for the Buffalo Sabres. His name is being mentioned in all sorts of trade rumors.
Evander Kane scores! Patrick Maroon!
We're all expecting Ottawa will be sellers. You know, Mike Hoffman's already acknowledged that. Like, he's waiting to be traded.
Vegas looking for something. Neal off the bench. His shot, they score!
Now you got these Pacioretty rumors.
As we get ready to gear up for trade deadline.
A quick rundown of the names that are going to be available or allegedly available. Allegedly on the move as we approach the NHL trade deadline. A new up-to-date TSN trade bait board released by our buddy Frank Zaravelli earlier this week.
And Drew, are you on that board?
No, you guys haven't. I'm surprised. I'm just going to be cut. You guys are just going to cut me and nobody's going
to
trade for me?
Drew, we have to talk to you in about 40 minutes.
In about 40. Well, I won an Ezzy, Dave, on last Saturday for worst host of the year.
Oh, we're aware.
Yeah. Thank you, Ezzy. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, that was very kind of you. Nice that you awarded yourself wedding of the year, but I managed to get worst host of the year.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. That was the wedding of the year.
Fine. I'm still mad at you that you didn't acknowledge my son's birth. You gave it to somebody else over my son. That's going to be a topic of conversation that we're going to have off air.
It's tough to win an Ezzy. Everybody wants an Ezzy, but I don't just, you know, give them out.
No, that's exactly what you do, is you just give them out.
No, that's not true. He became a little more judicious this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Hold on. Define judicious?
Anyways, let's talk about the TSN trade bait board.
As he looks that up on the...
In his thesaurus.
I think we're going to trade you to Virgin 103, Drew.
Drew, mm-hmm. I don't want to say that you're dating yourself, but how many people still use a thesaurus?
Well, they do online oftentimes if you're in a Microsoft Word
document.
But you
made it sound like it was more book form than computer form.
I think my dad still has a thesaurus in his house. You know,
like a paperback version.
Like a paperback thesaurus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, this segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant
another,
and Comedy
what's
Club.
What's another word for terrible host?
Well, those are two words. Rumors is officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. She's in town tonight. It's her last night in town. She's been playing to packed houses all week long. You know her from CBC's The Debaters. Erica Sigurdsson in town. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com, and a fantastic lineup of comedians available. They can check it out. Buy your tickets quickly. RumorsComedyClub.com. So Evander Kane atop the TSN trade bait board as we sit here on the 13th of January. Of course, Evander running into a little bit of controversy earlier this week.
Controversy or controversy?
Controversy, pardon me. Again, the worst host strikes again. As he and Zach Bogosian get tangled up. Bogosian injured, out 4 to 6 weeks. Justin Falk coming to the defense of Zach Bogosian and telling Evander Kane to shut the bleep up, you selfish bleep. And then a pushing match, erupting between the two. I think it's now a foregone conclusion, if it wasn't already, Evander Kane will not be long for upstate New York.
Yeah, and, I mean, he's a pending unrestricted free agent, and you know, he's going to get a big contract from someone.
Is he going to make... I mean, he's currently making $5.25 million. I think we all know what Evander Kane is as a player at this point in time. How much would you give Evander Kane in free agency? If you're acquiring him, what are you expecting from Evander Kane at this point?
He's a goal scorer, and he's a power forward. I don't think he's going to get $10 million like his teammate Jack Eichel got on his next contract. But you're talking about a guy that has 16 goals in 44 games. And, you know, what's he on pace for? 25, 27 goals? I mean, it's not easy to score 25 goals in the NHL. And don't get me wrong, Drew. I mean, Evander Kane is still a one-dimensional player as far as I'm concerned. At the very least, he's a two-dimensional player. He's a guy that can mix it up. He can drop the gloves. But he's a goal scorer. I mean, he's not a guy that's going to be a finalist for the Frank Selke Award. But he's still a valuable player. And he's only 26 years old. You forget that because he's been in the NHL since 2009 with Atlanta. But, a team like the Vegas Golden Knights is a team that I think would make sense for Evander Kane. And we know that he has a place there in Vegas. So, I mean, but there's a lot of teams that might want to get him as a rent-a-player. Right? Mm-hmm. Just because you acquire him prior to the trade deadline doesn't mean you're going to sign him to a 6 or 7 year deal. But, I mean, if you're asking me what I think he's going to make on an annual basis, I think someone will give him 5 or 6 a year, won't they?
If you were a team that's looking to buy...
$5 or $6 million.
Yeah, I know what you mean. If you're a team looking to buy at the trade deadline, is he the one you're most interested in? If you're a team in need of goal scoring, is he the easiest player to acquire, given that it's a pure rental? There's no term left on his contract like you have with a guy like... We mentioned him earlier in the program, Mike Hoffman, who still has 2 years left on his existing deal and a modified no-trade clause. You know, is Evander Kane just, okay, you need a goal scorer, this is the guy, he's going to cost you, you know, the going rate for a rental player, you know, maybe a late first round pick and maybe a prospect or something like that? Is he just sort of the easiest acquisition at the trade deadline?
What about if you're the LA Kings, right, and you're looking at other teams in the Western Conference like the Golden Knights and the Jets, who are second and third in the league in goal scoring right now? Wouldn't you maybe take a chance on Evander Kane and bring him in for a Stanley Cup run? We know that the Kings are most likely going to be a playoff team. I mean, I think there's a bunch of teams, both in the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference, that might want his services. Pittsburgh Penguins, they've been having some trouble scoring goals this year. You know, maybe they bring in a guy like Evander Kane. He's fast. We know the Penguins are still one of the fastest teams in the league. So I do think there is going to be a lot of interest. I don't think there's going to be 15 teams after Kane, but I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if there are 2, 3, 4 teams that are seriously interested in bringing him in. And I think it's a good point that you make, Drew, because I think Evander Kane is in kind of a similar situation to Andrew Ladd when he was in his final year with the Jets, and the Jets moved Andrew Ladd to the Blackhawks and got a first rounder and Mark O'Dano.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Kane gets a first rounder and a prospect, but he's going to get moved. We know that. And someone's going to sign him after that.
Dave, another name that's on the trade bait board that jumped out to me is Thomas Vanek. He's had a good year with the Vancouver Canucks. You know, he was signed late in the offseason. He's got 12 goals, 29 points in 43 games. He's clearly going to get traded at the trade deadline or just in the run-up to it. But if you're acquiring Thomas Vanek, aren't you concerned over the number of times that he's been acquired at the deadline and to do then is a complete no-show, you know, when push comes to shove in the playoffs?
Yeah, sure. But what do you have to give up to get Thomas Vanek, right? You don't have to give up a first-rounder.
No.
You probably give up a third-rounder, fourth-round draft pick or, you know, a middling prospect to get him. But I know what you're saying. I mean, you remember when he was acquired by the Montreal Canadiens, they thought that he was going to give him a big boost in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And then they started calling him Thomas Vanish.
Yeah.
So, you know, sure, Vanek's put together a good season with the Canucks. But as far as I'm concerned, if you're acquiring him, it's to be in your bottom six, third line guy. He can't be a top six guy at this point in his career.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, you're talking about augmenting teams. I mean, and again, if you're a team that's really planning on pushing for a playoff spot, you really probably aren't looking for a guy who's going into your top six. You're really trying to, you know, convert, as Drew talked about earlier in the show, a third line from a checking line into a scoring line, and then really have your fourth be that kind of checking line with occasionally contributing on goals with a goal or two. So yeah, but I mean, Vanek is kind of one of those like no-show playoff guys to this point, really. So I mean, do you get overly excited if Thomas Vanek is coming into your lineup? I don't think so.
In terms of the defensemen, it's not a great crop of defensemen in terms of the trade bait board. But Mike Green, who's on Detroit, he's in the final year of his contract in Detroit. You know, for a team that's looking for a bit of a boost offensively, Mike Green is a really interesting name out there that could probably help a lot of teams. Good puck moving defenseman. He's slowed down from his heyday in Washington, but this is a guy who can still contribute to a lot of teams, I think, on the back end.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of interest in Mike Green if they do decide to move him. A team, again, that sticks out to me is the Pittsburgh Penguins, who we know year after year are buyers, and they've made some good moves. We talked about it earlier, picking up Ron Hainsey and Mark Streit. I mean, you think of those guys as maybe a little bit washed up, but they played key roles. Hainsey, not Streit. Streit didn't play a key role.
Yeah, but Ron Hainsey was great for the Penguins.
But Hainsey was a top four defenseman for the Penguins in last year's playoff run. So, you know, a team like the Penguins, I could see, you know, being interested in Mike Green. But there are a bunch of teams, you know, that might want to use him kind of in a bottom pairing role. These are teams, you know, that are going to be in the playoffs, obviously. So a team like the Chicago Blackhawks, we talked about it. You know, they're in search of a top four defenseman. Don't think Mike Green is necessarily a top four defenseman. He might play in the top four, but he's not at that same level that he was, as you mentioned, back in the day with the Capitals.
But if you need a boost to your power play.
Right. I mean, and the Blackhawks do.
I mean, he's got 24 points in 41 games this year. I mean, those are respectable numbers, certainly. This is a guy who, if your power play is struggling or you need a quarterback on your power play, Mike Green would probably fit in very well on a lot of different teams. And, you know, sure, he's a pure rental, again, unrestricted free agent. What's he going to cost you? I mean,
exactly.
he might cost you a first-round pick, though.
I don't know about a first-round pick, maybe more so a second- or third-round pick, because we're not talking about Kevin Shattenkirk here.
No, but, I mean, you saw what Shattenkirk did last year for the Capitals, which was nothing tremendous.
But regardless, I mean, it's probably going to be, if it is a first-round pick, it's going to be a late first-round pick.
The story of the season in the NHL so far has been the Vegas Golden Knights, and everyone expected that they were going to be sellers at the trade deadline, and that was probably a lot of the reason why they, you know, drafted a couple of the guys they did in the expansion draft. David Perron and James Neal are two of those guys who are unrestricted free agents at season's end. You're the Golden Knights. Do you have to be buyers?
I don't know if you have to be buyers, but you're, as you mentioned, you're not sellers because you're going to the playoffs. There's no way the Golden Knights aren't going to the playoffs, and it sounds ridiculous because you thought at best, Drew, they might be kind of a seventh or eighth seed in the Western Conference, but they're number one seed.
Yeah.
And again, it really is the story, so I don't expect them to move James Neal or David Perron. Maybe they go out and they acquire one or two players. You know, Evander Kane is a guy you know, that I mentioned kind of makes a lot of sense there. But it's just ridiculous to think, because of what we thought the Vegas Golden Knights were going to be back in September, that they're going to be a buyer. So, yeah, to answer your question, they are.
it'll be a fascinating lead up to the trade deadline again. Like we said, 6-7 weeks away. This won't be our only time looking at the TSN trade bait board. It'll be interesting as it's a wide open season in the NHL. You know, Tampa Bay is clearly the best team in the East, but the West is pretty wide open. So it'll be interesting to see how teams decide to load up for Stanley Cup runs. Speaking of the trade deadline came and went in the Western Hockey League. The Brandon Wheat Kings made two huge trades. We'll talk about those next with the voice of the Brandon Wheat Kings, Brandon Crow. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuke with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program the voice of the Brandon Wheat Kings, a good friend of ours. Brandon Crow joins us on the line. Brandon, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to be with you.
Our pleasure to have you, Brandon. WHL Western Hockey League trade deadline came and went earlier this week, and it was a doozy for the Brandon Wheat Kings, and we'll talk about the trades in their specifics coming up here. But typically when a team is in a playoff spot, they're buyers, at least in the NHL, they're buyers. Yet the Brandon Wheat Kings, a team that is, you know, third best in the entire Western Hockey League, sold and sold heavily at the trade deadline. How surprised were you with the moves the Wheat Kings made?
Well, people have asked me that over the last couple of days, and I'm not entirely surprised. I was pretty sure this was the direction that the boat was headed. You know, especially after Swift Current and Regina made the moves they did, and Moose Jaw went ahead and acquired some bodies as well. I think people that don't have a kind of ability to look at the big picture see this move and question it and go, well, they're the sixth ranked team in the country. They get the third best record in the Western Hockey League. Why are they folding the tent? I mean, but you got to remember that, you know, Swift Current basically has, you know, for lack of a better term, thrown away the next 4 years of their franchise to try and make a run for it this year. I mean, they've given up 8 consecutive first round picks, 4 that were playing for them, and 4 more moving forward in the future. And I think they are committed. It's win or bust for Swift Current, and it's the same for Moose Jaw. And right now, Regina's in a tough spot, too, hosting Memorial Cup. Those three teams were getting better and giving up everything to get better. And I think Brandon was in a situation that they thought, you know what, we can get better, sure, but are we going to be able to compete with them in the playoffs? And if we don't, are we going to give away our future just to get through the first round and lose in the second round to one of those teams? So I think it's a smart move. I think the fans are a little upset about it, and I understand why. I mean, Tanner Kaspik's homegrown boy, Cale Clegg's a world junior player, and both of them are face of the franchise type guys, but I think it's a smart move, and I think it's going to pay off. I mean, they're not folding the tent on the year. They won last night. They're still going to make a push for the playoffs. Brandon's a team that seems to guarantee their fans playoff hockey every year, and right now it's a situation where they're going to go ahead with a younger group, and they're stocked up for the future, whereas everyone else in the division, for the next couple of years, they're going to struggle to have enough players to put on the roster and quality players at that. So I think Brandon made the right move.
Now, Brandon, prior to the trade, Cale Clegg had spent his entire WHL career with the Wheat Kings, and you just mentioned, you know, Tanner Kaspik is from Brandon. Was it harder for Kaspik to be traded just because he is a hometown boy and he was the captain of this team?
I think so. I mean, we were talking about it on our pregame show last night about how Tanner Kaspik has literally played every minute of his hockey career in Brandon. He learned to skate in Brandon. He played all his minor hockey there. You know, he plays midget hockey there, and then he gets an opportunity to captain his team. And, I mean, it's funny because every time I talk to him about, you know, just being the captain of the Brandon Wheat Kings when he was first given the honor, I mean, he got choked up about it because he talked about how, as a kid, you know, his room was covered in Wheat King posters, and he came to every game. And he was the kid that played mini sticks on the concourse and tried to get high fives from the players as they came off the ice. And he's a kid that just lives and breathes Brandon Wheat Kings hockey, and I think it made it real tough. And, I mean, if you heard Grant Armstrong, our general manager, talk in his post-trade deadline scrum, I mean, he had to hold back tears because, you know, it's such an emotional thing when you've got a young man like Tanner Kaspik come into your office as upset as he was that he has to say goodbye. And, I mean, It sucks because it is a business, but at the end of the day, these are just teenagers. And so I think it was an emotional week, especially for the veteran guys that have been around a long time and the people in the front office that have been around Tanner and watched him grow. It's just a tough trade. And for Cale as well, I mean, he's won a championship in Brandon. He's committed his entire career here. It was a real tough week. And, I mean, I've been a part of a few trade deadlines. I mean, last year they gave up Jordan Paperny, which was an emotional one. But nothing will ever top the sheer sadness, I guess, of having to watch a local board captain walk away. But he's in a great opportunity. He had a goal and an assist last night. He had 8 shots on goal in the game winner in Victoria. So, you know what? I think he'll be all right.
You know, Brandon, you've talked about how the team hasn't conceded the playoffs and they're still going to make a push and they're in third place in the Eastern Conference. One thing they've been really good at is how well they've played at home, 19-3, 1-1 at Westman Place. What has been so special about playing in the inside Brandon?
Well, I asked this to a few people. I asked this to every visiting coach that comes in, and the consensus is, if I were to put all their answers together, there's 3 answers. It's dirty, it's old, and it's loud, and it's got some weird nuances. You know, you come into that place and it smells like a rodeo, first and foremost. And that's just the way it always has been ever since I was a kid. And I think some of the teams that come in here that have some players that have never been in here go, what is that? Why does it smell in here? Why is it always so dirty and dusty? And I think that's part of it. It's cold. It's one of the coldest rinks in the league. The boards are not NHL-style boards. They've got old plywood, and it's just drilled right into the concrete. They've got the old glass with the stanchions. The benches are on opposite sides. And when you look in the rafters, there is a handful of banners up there. And there were some good players that have rolled through Brandon. The building has this kind of historic feel to it when you come in there. And I think it's real intimidating for the players. The fans are right on top of you. I mean, people that come in to Brandon know what kind of players rolled through there. And obviously Brian Propp and Ray Allison and Bill Derlego and, you know, all the guys that came before there that have walked through those halls. It's a scary place to play. And, you know, it's funny. I asked a young guy the other day from Moose Jaw who was playing his first game in Brandon. I said, why don't you like playing in here? And he goes, well, because when you get hit, it feels like you're getting smashed into a concrete wall. And I think that is kind of a home ice advantage that Brandon has. And for some reason, teams just don't like playing here. And it's been a great year so far at home. The fans have really enjoyed it. And the team is really thriving on home ice. I think it's just the building, it's just old. It's just got a kind of weird feel that intimidates the opposing teams.
Brandon Crow is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the play-by-play voice of the Brandon Wheat Kings. Wheat Kings winners last night. They're going to do battle again tonight at home against the Medicine Hat Tigers. Brandon, for the guys who are still on the team, I mean, they still, you know, obviously, you know, expect that they're going to be a playoff team. The Wheat Kings are in a playoff spot. Do you get the sense from the guys who are still on the team that there might be a chip on their shoulders and that everybody's counting them out with these trades and there might be sort of a us against the world mentality that's now pervasive in the dressing room?
I think so, and I think you saw a lot of that on the 10-game winning streak they went on just before Christmas too. I mean, they beat some good teams. I mean, they beat Victoria and Kamloops, and they beat Regina and Moose Jaw and Swift Current. Like, those guys in that dressing room right now are annoyed. They are annoyed that they're not getting any credit for anything. I mean, you look at the social media, you look at all the pundits, you look at all the guys in the national level and, you know, Sportsnet, they're all talking about Regina, Moose Jaw, and how good Swift Current are, and nobody's talking about Brandon right now. And I mean, it's in any other year, everybody would be talking about Brandon right now. And I think it's almost a good thing to have that underdog role. I know the guys in the room are saying, hey, we may not have loaded up, we may not have the world-class talent that these other teams do, but we're going to work hard and we're going to give you a run for your money every night. And I think that is where Grant Armstrong wants this team to go now that the team is set. You know, you talked to the players last night. I mean, they get up 2-0 on Calgary. And obviously Calgary's a team that's struggling right now. But it was a big boost to come out of that trade deadline and get a victory 4-1 convincing fashion that they did last night. You could just see the confidence. Some of the young guys that have been kind of sitting in the wings going, oh, boy, am I going to get traded? Am I going to get cut? What's going to happen here? They've got a whole nother life. And so I think you're right. They've got an us-against-the-world mentality. We head out on the U.S. Division road trip on Sunday night for 7 games through the U.S. Division with a stops in Kootenay on the way home. That'll be the test. If they can go 500 or better on that trip, look out. I think this Brandon team might have a shot at rolling into the playoffs, a real hot team, and going to give some of those top teams some serious trouble.
Brandon, we were talking about the Vegas Golden Knights last segment and talking about what they might do prior to the NHL trade deadline coming up in late February. And, of course, the assistant general manager of the Vegas Golden Knights is Brandon Wheat Kings owner Kelly McCrimmon. Have you had a chance to talk to Kelly recently or over the last couple of months? And how much does he follow the Wheat Kings? Or is that maybe an obvious question considering that he still owns the team?
Well, I think he's got a lot. I mean, he's got a lot more, invested in the team than a lot of people think. I mean, people thought he's going to go to the NHL and you know, that'll be it. You'll just he'll disappear and he'll just kind of keep an outside look on it. But you know, through the entire trade process here at the WHL trade deadline, I mean, he was involved. I mean, he's the guy that sits on speakerphone in the back and kind of overhears everything and knows what's going on. I mean, that's he doesn't make decisions, but he always knows what's going on, and that's the thing with him. And I had a chance to talk to him probably about a month ago, and we were talking about Vegas's goaltending situation and everything else, and he said, you know what, back in junior, it was a lot easier to make moves and to find yourself a goalie than it is at the NHL level. He goes, nobody in the NHL level wants to do you a favor, especially when you got off to as good of a start as Vegas did, and they already took teams of players off their roster. So, I mean, he knows everything that's going on. I've been told he watches or he listens to every game. If not live, he watches it later. And I even had one guy tell me that he was watching a weekend game in the Vegas press box one night during a home game. So I think he's pretty involved. You know, this team is his passion, and I know that he's in the NHL now, but I think if you asked him and you caught him quickly with what team he works for, his first answer would be the Brandon Wheat Kings.
You know, Brandon, how well-received was the Ivan Provorov bobblehead night? And you know, last time we had you on, the Brandon Wheat Kings were doing the Star Wars night, so how was that received by the fans in Brandon?
Well, Star Wars night was really neat. There was a lot of fans in the building that I'd never seen before. A lot of people that maybe weren't even hockey fans. They were just coming out for the experience. I think you see a lot of teams in junior and even minor pro doing the Star Wars nights now, and it's really cool. I thought the jerseys were neat. They raised a lot of money for the MS Society, which was kind of the key point of the whole thing, was the money raised in the jersey auction. I know they had a ton of Star Wars characters there. A costume company out of Winnipeg brought in a bunch of characters. They walked around. Heck, I even did my pregame video in a Chewbacca costume for the Jumbotron. So even I got into this swing of things. I've never seen a minute of Star Wars. Last night, Ivan Provorov, there's two things people in Brandon line up for. A free lunch and a weekend's bobblehead. And it, for some reason, last night it was no different. They had 2,000 to give away. There was 4,000 people in the building. So what they did was, because it was so cold, they didn't want people lined up outside the doors. So they handed out two color of cards as people entered the building, a black and a yellow. And then they played a game of Plinko at the first intermission. And whatever the Plinko landed in, that was what people got. Then they could go pick up, if they had the corresponding color, they could go get their bobblehead. Well, they did it at the media timeout of the first period, and it ended up being the yellow card that won. Well, the second that Plinko hit the board and it won, the stands empty. Everybody was going to the M&T Hall to get their bobblehead, and nobody cared about the game. People missed the whole second period to get their Ivan Provorov bobblehead. It was unbelievable. My color guy's wife there, she stood in line for over 35 minutes to get her bobblehead. So, fans, I don't know what it is. Free lunches and bobbleheads, and you'll get people lined up for miles in Brandon.
And by the way, the reason why Dave was asking you is because he was hoping that you could hook him up with a Provorov bobblehead.
Absolutely.
He loves his bobbleheads.
Well, I'll see if there's any extras. I might be able to help you out. I know we had a couple extra Chris Dingman ones left out, and Darren Dreger of TSN, who used to ride the bus with Dingman as the voice of the Wheat Kings, he desperately wanted one, and they were able to find one for him and send it out to Toronto. So I'll see what I can do for you.
Thanks, Brandon, man. Final question for you here. We talked earlier about the two big trades that the Wheat Kings made, moving Cale Clegg and moving Tanner Kaspik. Now that those two players have been moved, who on the Wheaties is a player, or maybe there are a couple players that you're looking to, you know, fill the void of the offense that is going to be missed by those two players now moving on?
Well, I think Stelios Mathios is going to play a big part still, and I think you know, he's a guy that's kind of struggled over the last month. I think he was trying to find a role, and he wasn't sure what he was going to be doing and how much they were going to rely on him. He's obviously a big piece. He's a Winnipeg kid. Everybody talked about him from the moment Brandon drafted him first overall. I mean, secondary scoring is going to be key, because aside from Stelios Mathios and a guy like Ty Lewis, who is leading the team in scoring right now, you know, those two guys, they can't do it on their own. And we saw last night a couple of young guys, Caden Daly, another kid from Winnipeg, he stepped up with a goal and an assist last night, arguably his best game as a Wheat King. I think Connor Gutenberg, a Brandon kid who probably in contention to take over the captaincy from Tanner, he's going to be a guy that's going to have to step up. And, you know, we've got a guy here from California, Evan Weinger, we acquired from Portland, and he's basically scored 20 goals since arriving from Brandon. Was a little snake bitten last night, but, you know, that line of him, Gutenberg, and Lewis has been fantastic. So it's going to have to be a group effort. You're not going to have a one-sided score sheet at the end of every night. Everybody's going to have to pull out their socks here, but I think that this is a group that's way tighter than they were last year. It's a better room. It's a better group of guys, and I think that they don't care who gets the points. They just want to win right now and prove everybody wrong. So I think you can expect a serious full team efforts with a lot of secondary scoring if the Wheat Kings are going to have any success moving forward.
Brandon Crow is the play-by-play voice of the Brandon Wheat Kings. Brandon, appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You betcha. Enjoy the day, fellas.
Likewise, Brandon. Take care. When we come back, one final segment. We'll touch on the Jets in the Wild. We'll touch a little bit more on Blake Wheeler as a Hart Trophy candidate. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
But as far as I'm concerned, White Zombie...
Counting down the days until what?
Yeah. The concert.
Oh.
When's
the concert?
I believe it's early May.
I don't think you're going to that concert
it's
anymore there, big boy.
Yeah, well, we have a baby Ginsburg
coming.
That's
what I'm saying. The concert...
Oh, it's funny. My rationale was because there's playoff hockey.
Oh, no. I was thinking that Daddy's going to be on some bottle duty come early May.
Oh, yeah. Big Daddy's going to be buying some diapers, that's for sure.
For yourself.
Oh, it's May 20th, yeah. Which is actually 5 days before Naomi's due.
Well, you might be able to get to that concert. Is Naomi going with you to the concert?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I wouldn't think it would be...
I could be baby-inducing at that point.
The big bass going on at that point in time. You know, have a little bit of a party there on the floor of the MTS Center.
I'm a little bit worried, though. Apparently, Josh Homme, who's the lead singer of Queens of the Stone Age, got into a little trouble kicking a photographer at a recent concert. So hopefully that doesn't happen in Winnipeg.
I'm actually hoping he kicks you. Welcome back. Anyways, one final segment on this Saturday morning. I want to give a shout-out to all our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. The Jets in the Wild tonight, 6
well, hold
p.m.
Hold on. I also want to give a shout-out to Remo. It was his birthday yesterday. So
Michael
happy,
Remus.
Happy birthday, Michael, and also our good friend AP. His birthday earlier this week.
Okay, you're giving out the birthday shout-outs left, right, and center.
And one more, Connor McDavid.
Ah.
He's 21 years old,
ah.
And they play in Vegas.
Ah.
So you know what that means. And they're off for the next 5 days.
So it might be Connor might tip it up a little bit.
Connor is going to be partying.
Yeah, they won last night in Arizona, so they get the second half of a back-to-back, and then you get the five-day break. Yeah, they should have a good party. I hope for their sake. You know, you think he can afford a good party there? You know, $10.5 million a year, or whatever he's making on his next contract.
He'll borrow some money from Dreisaitl.
Yeah, there you go. Anyways, happy birthday shout-outs there, according to Ezzy. One final segment, as I mentioned, on this Saturday morning, the Jets into St. Paul to play the Wild tonight, a 6 p.m. puck drop, second half of the back-to-back for the Jets, their final game before they head into the break. Sort of any keys to the game from your perspective? They've had success against the Wild so far this year, probably a little bit of a bad taste in their mouth after the loss last night in Chicago. You never want to go into a five-day break having lost back-to-back games. So, you know, what's the key for the Jets tonight against the Minnesota Wild?
I would say simplify their game, guys, and I think it's obvious to say, Dave, that you know scoring the first goal is important, because when the Jets score the first goal of the game, you know they win, 75-80% of their games, so their record is obviously a lot worse when they give up the first goal. But for me, it's simplifying their game and making sure you know that they get back to kind of the basics, because I thought at times that game against Chicago, it opened up quite a bit, and I thought the Jets were relying a little bit too much on making plays off of the rush.
Mm-hmm.
But they were using their speed very effectively, so I think you have to be more effective with your use of the speed is what I would say against the Minnesota Wild. And the Wild, let's be honest, they're not the fastest team, you know, and they want to keep, you know, their good streak going here. They won against the Chicago Blackhawks, obviously. You know, that was a big win for them, and they're battling with the Blackhawks for that last playoff spot, as you mentioned. So, you know, for me, it's kind of simplifying your game a little bit more. And, you know, it's going to be tough because, you know, it's short travel coming from Chicago, but, you know, it's your last game before the break, and you want to head into the break on a winning note. So they obviously don't need this win because they're leading the division, but they also don't want to go into the break, you know, losing two in a row. So for me, that would be a key. And, you know, I we talked about it before. I think, you know, that third line didn't have their best game yesterday against Chicago. And even though Minnesota might not be where they were last year, they still have a lot of weapons that you got to shut down. Guys like Granlund, Mikko Koivu, Eric Staal. So, you know, they're going to have to be sharp defensively, Dave.
Yeah, and I think Mike Greenlay talked about it when we had him on the show, earlier in the show, sorry, and in that they flipped the script. You know, similar to how Chicago seems to have Winnipeg's number,
mm-hmm.
the Jets have Minnesota's number this season. So I think you need to kind of continue that. We spoke at length, of course, how important it is to win these divisional games. And again, you just can't get complacent, and you can't you know, enjoy the fact that you're at the top of the heap right now, because the reality is you're going to have 5 days off and a lot of teams could catch you and surpass you. I mean, Nashville's got games in hand. St. Mm-hmm. Louis doesn't, obviously, but yeah. The reality is teams are going to be playing some games. And so you could find yourself with a lot less breathing room if you have two less points in the bank. So yeah. I think the Jets, from their perspective, need to come up with another big gutsy effort and beat Minnesota tonight.
After tonight, the Jets and the Blues will have played the same number of games. This is the last game in hand that the Jets have. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Predators, who are on their bye week, and the Blues are on their bye week. The Preds come back on, I believe that's Tuesday night, right, off their bye week. They get home against Vegas, and they'll have four games in hand on both the Jets and the Blues while the Jets sit at home during their bye week.
The point, I couldn't get the words out, but the point I was trying to make is managing the puck better, because we've seen the Jets manage the puck so well this year. In the last, you know, six or seven games, but they didn't have, you know, as much zone time as I think you would like, mm-hmm, against the Chicago Blackhawks. So Minnesota, as I mentioned, very good defensive team. Devan Dubnyk is playing a lot better, you know, than he was earlier in the season. So I'd like to see a lot more zone time and pressure from the Jets.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll find out later on this evening how that game is going to shake out, the Jets in the Wild. 6 p.m. tonight on TSN 1290. Our coverage gets underway at 3 o'clock with the afternoon ride with Hustler and Rick. That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to all of our guests. Brandon Crow, Wheat Kings broadcaster, Chris Kontos, former member of Team Canada, Michael Trakos of Post Media, Mike Greenlay, Minnesota Wild TV analyst, and Mitch Peacock, Manitoba Moose broadcaster. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes and anywhere where you get your podcasts, also available on tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website. It's got the latest Manitoba Moose and Winnipeg Jets news and audio. That's IllegalCurve.com. Big props to producer Rory, for Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
As long as we sit together as a team, we'll be all right.